Okay, good afternoon. First of a word on the budget. It's my sense and certainly the feedback I've been picking up as I go around the country that this budget has been well received. I'm pleased that people are looking beyond the personal implications of the tax changes to why we are doing what we are doing, which is trying to address the integrity of and design of the tax system. I think people are understanding that the tax changes are designed to put the right incentives in the economy. The fact that three quarters of taxpayers will now face a marginal tax rate of no more than 17.5% has, I believe, really resonated with New Zealanders. And what has also had an impact is the fact that our personal and company tax rates now make us more competitive with Australia. People can see the big picture, which is around moving the economy away from consumption and borrowing and more towards savings and productive investment. Moving on to Auckland local governments, most of you will have seen the statement today issued by Local Government Minister Rodney Hyde welcoming the tabling of the third and final piece of legislation for the reform of Auckland local governance into a single unified council. The reform is all about enhancing the effectiveness of community participation in democracy while ensuring the council has strong, effective regional decision-making ability, essentially so it can get things done. The Select Committee is recommending a number of changes which the government will be accepting. Briefly, these include more clearly defining and strengthening the roles of local boards, as well as ensuring that the new Auckland Council has effective control over the CCOs. That'll include whether to replace the personnel on those CCOs from day one. These were two significant issues that came through the Select Committee hearings, and we're pleased to be addressing them in this third bill, which is expected to have its second reading this week. As the government has navigated its way through this process, it has done its best to listen to Aucklanders and reflect their concerns. There were obviously a range of views, and the government has moved to incorporate a lot of those ideas. It's worth remembering that this process was started because of the generally held view that Auckland was being held back by its governance structure. The new Auckland Council provides a way forward to make Auckland an even greater city to live in, to work in and to play in. And I'd like to thank the Select Committee who took the time to share their opinions and the Minister and Chair of the Select Committee for their combined efforts to make a good piece of legislation even better. On to Leakey Homes. I'd like to give you a quick update on Leakey Homes. Since the government announced its assistance package last week, new weather-type claims have been coming in steadily to the Department of Building and Housing since the announcement. They've also received inquiries from some large apartment block owners with only a few days left on their 10-year liability limit about lodging a claim. That's great because we're encouraging owners of leaky homes to lodge weather-tight claims as soon as possible so they can stop the clock on the 10-year liability limit. If the claim is approved, the clock stops at the time the application was received. There have been 15 new weather-tight claims lodged with the department from across the country since the announcement last Monday. That's the same number of claims as was received for the entire month of April, and there's been 140 inquiries from the existing claimants about the financial assistance package. The government is waiting for responses from local authorities so we can continue can finalise transition arrangements for existing claimants and deal with operational detail. I understand councils are actively considering the proposal over the next week or so, but indications so far show there appears to be solid support from councils. I now want to give you a sense of what's going on in the Pete Bethune case. The New Zealand government is providing all the consular support that we can, but it's worth noting that I can't get involved in a prosecution in another country any more than I can get involved in a prosecution in New Zealand. What I can do is make sure that the person is being treated fairly. The New Zealand Embassy is providing regular consular support for Mr. Bethune, and their most recent call on him was, I understand, last Wednesday, where they were able to talk to him for about an hour. His trial starts this Thursday and is set to take 4 days. We understand 3 days have been set aside for the trial, with a reserve day in June. He has a number of senior lawyers working on his behalf. The embassy will have a representative at the court throughout the trial to monitor the proceedings. Regarding contact with Mr. Bethune, I'm advised that the embassy and his lawyers can have access at any time. We will continue to monitor the situation closely. In terms of my own activity, tomorrow I have caucus in the House. On Wednesday, I'll open a new administration block at Pinehaven School in Upper Hutt, and in the evening I'll attend a fundraising event at the Duxton for the Wellington Children's Hospital. On Thursday, I'm in Auckland for numerous events, including the launch of the Computer Clubhouse project in Manukau. On Friday, I open a new auditorium at Maharangi College in Warkworth, and on Saturday and Sunday, I'll be at the National Party's Northern Regional Conference in the Bay of Islands. And tomorrow night I'll be in Auckland with my son, who's having his 15th birthday. And finally, the House this week will largely be taken up with a debate on the budget. The Sentencing and Parole Reform Bill will also receive its third reading. No, I wouldn't necessarily draw that conclusion straight away. There's a process that we need to go through. The Overseas Investment Office will consider all of the aspects of the application. They'll make a recommendation to two ministers. Those ministers are Simon Power and Maurice Williamson. At that point, those ministers will have to make a decision about whether an application is successful or otherwise. And I personally wouldn't want to prejudice the outcome of that. Well, I think he's reflected on comments he's seen in the media, but I don't think it's wise for us to continue to make comments on the success or otherwise of a case that's before the Overseas Investment Office.
But has he been prejudiced that he has actually made those comments that's unlikely to go through?
Well, I don't believe he has, but I'm not going to engage further in debate on whether it's going to be successful or not. It's in the hands of the Overseas Investment Office. It'll ultimately, or most likely, be in the hands of ministers in some time.
Have you discussed those comments with him?
I have, yeah.
And what did you say to him?
I don't think we should continue to make comments in that regard. No, and I don't think they do.
In regard to the sale of SMB,
yep.
How long is actually
considering after the next year? Well, I don't even think you can say we've been considering that. The position's been reasonably clear-cut, which was we came into the 2008-2011 period guaranteeing to New Zealanders there would be no asset sales, and I intend to honour that commitment. Because it was a one-term commitment, it's important that we kick the tyres on that policy, and going into the 2011 campaign, we have a clear policy, either to retain the existing position or to change that. What I can guarantee New Zealanders is it will be very unambiguous. In other words, it will be quite clear what we're doing. I can't tell you what that is. There's been no real internal discussions, and there'll be merits or otherwise of that potential for sales, but at this point, there's been no internal discussion. There's been no work done on it.
When would you expect work to start?
We're going to need to make a decision, and clearly so that New Zealanders can understand what our position would be, and it would take some time to consider the merits of that. So I imagine work will start in the latter part of this year, and exactly when we'll be in a position to communicate our policy for the 2011 election, I'm not sure, but it'll be well in advance of the election.
It seems quite clear.
Well, I'm not sure it's an entirely scientific poll just because we have a hands up at a meeting. But look, the Finance Minister does get asked that question on numerous occasions, and I think he was simply making the point that one of the things that we wanted to achieve in the budget is greater levels of investment and savings. Now, one of the issues that gets raised all the time with the Finance Minister is that concerns New Zealanders have had about finance companies, concerns that there's not alternative investment. So you can understand the logic of that. But what our position will be going into 2011 is very unclear at this point. We haven't done any work, and I wouldn't want to speculate that we will change our position. I'll just simply give you a commitment that you'll know up front. It's not short of cash, but what is true is that the bank has been expanding quite rapidly, and there have been conversations with the board, New Zealand Post Board, to see a desire for a capital injection in Kiwi Bank so it can grow. Now, the options for those capital, well, there are a number of options. One is we could refuse that request. The second is that we could look to grow Kiwi Bank through a capital injection ourselves, just in the same way we did with Kiwi Rail, for instance. But at this point, that decision hasn't been made.
What will you be considering
Well, there are a range of issues we need to consider. I really don't want to speculate on those today because we haven't even started that process. But I think it's fair to say one of the key requirements is that New Zealand mums and dads could ultimately be investors. But look, it's quite a long way down the track, and it's a somewhat circular argument to start discussing it today.
What's the money's free trade deal put us in a different context than, say, 20 years ago, given that the investment between the likes of China and New Zealand is now much freer, so more difficult to make sure that it's just
Kiwi mum. Well, I think that's always true of the international financial markets. You can control the first purchaser of a share, you can't necessarily easily control the second purchaser of a share. Now, when you had New Zealand A and B shares, there was an attempt to do that, but it hasn't always been a successful structure. Again, that's one of the issues that the government would have to consider.
So that would be quite a challenge. I mean, you actually wouldn't be able to purchase a partial go like that as only
Well, I wouldn't want to speculate on that. I mean, that's the thing. I haven't had any advice on that. No work's been done on that. So, we'd need to consider that in due course.
If you go down the asset sales route at the next election, would you be expecting to list specific assets that are up for sale, or just the general intention to sell stuff?
Well, again, there's not much point in me speculating on that today when ministers haven't even had a chance to discuss that.
There's been media speculation about the government taking stake in Chorus.
No, I wouldn't describe that as accurate. I mean, we've made it clear that through the Crown Fibre Holdings, we are looking to invest up to $1.5 billion into ultra-fast broadband. The moves by Telecom today are potentially positive, but I wouldn't want to go any further than that. Well, I would have thought that would be the place that find more favour, if that was where we went.
Well, would it be fair to assume then that a government majority shareholder would get
voted
as well?
I would have thought so, yeah. But again, we haven't had discussions for us to know that.
Yeah, both of those things were things that they would be in question.
I think they are sort of folklore around the place these days.
Could you be happy to keep talking about this and seeking people's opinions at the stage of the election?
Well, look, there's a clear process we need to go through, and that is define for ourselves what we want the policy to be going to 2011, kick the tyres on the merits of that policy, whatever it might be, either full retention or some change of that policy, and then articulate that to New Zealanders. Now, as I say, we'll need to start that process sometime soon and be in a position to communicate that. And that's always been the case. This isn't actually new. You have asked me in the past, and I've made it clear in the past, can't tell you exactly when, but I'm sure you can look back through your transcripts, that I've always said, look, I'm not ideologically opposed to asset sales, but it's not a first-term agenda item. We made a commitment, and I intend to honour that commitment. Beyond there, we'll need to come back. Look, I didn't see those comments, so I wouldn't really want to speculate on them.
You just see that a fast-growing bank, is eyed suspiciously. Well, that's something the credit rating agencies take into account.
Well, I just simply don't have enough detailed conversations with the credit rating agencies to tell you whether that's accurate or not.
But I'm just saying, finance ministers, using it as a comment at the same time, saying effectively, well,
it may be, and he's in the best position to judge that, but I'm not. I just simply haven't had those discussions with them.
Is this a way to test the
No, I think he was genuinely answering a question that he gets asked on a lot of occasions. And as I say, we've been transparent with the process, which is no asset sales this term, a clear position when we go into 2011. I certainly wouldn't get ahead of yourselves. I'm not saying there couldn't be a change. It's possible, but I also wouldn't guarantee there would be one. There just hasn't been enough discussion or work done internally.
So you're not saying there wouldn't be a change on
what? On our current position. It may or may not change, but we'll do that work, and we'll clearly go and campaign on whatever our position might be.
You sound like you might be a little bit frightened of it.
No, I'm not actually.
Why not? Because it would be a change.
No, because we have a good process in our government, which is if we're going to either retain or change a position, we go and kick the tires on it, make sure we're happy with it, and we haven't done that work.
Does the government need to sell assets or raise more capital to solve that? Is that an issue?
That would depend on a few circumstances, but not really, in so much as I think we're getting on top of our debt position, but there could be other factors. Because there was no conflict of interest early on, no need for him to excuse himself. The decision about whether the process, if you like, in the first instance was the commissioner, in this case David Gascoigne, had responsibility to determine whether there was a case to answer. That involved no action or consideration on the part of the Attorney General, so therefore there was no conflict. At the point at which David Gascoigne, in his role, then needed to refer that to the Attorney General for potentially the establishment of that panel, then clearly there was a potential conflict of interest. The Attorney General himself recognised that and excused himself. So he's, in my view, absolutely correctly followed process.
And are you comfortable with what's happening at Supreme Court, the cloud under the
government? Well, look, again, this is a process we're going through. I'm not sure I'd want to overly comment on that. It's important that that this process can go through on an uncontaminated basis.
Has there been any cooperation from Japan regarding the 80-day
investigation? I don't have an update on that, but I can get it for you. I'm sorry.
Following on from the comments you made on the internet this morning on
record, yep.
If you are committed to the internet,
yep.
Why is it simply in the public that you're going to be neutral beyond Kyoto when Kenya can't?
Yeah. I might have to get you an answer from that from Nick Smith's office, but how they account for it, I'm not 100% sure there.
Treasury says it's because there's no international agreement in place.
Well, they will have a way of how they recognise the liability, and I suspect it's because we are committed for CP1, and beyond that, until there is another commitment, they can't register that liability or asset, depending on which one they think it is, in the Crown accounts, but you really need to take that up with them. I'm not sure what accounting treatment they use for that, but what we do know is in terms of our Kyoto obligations at this point, that will be an asset going to 2012, not a liability. Cost about half of what would have occurred under a Labor government, and about, we think, on estimate, on average, about $3 a household a week.
So people are really going to be facing more and more costs over the next, even in the run-up to October. I mean, there are some pretty substantial costs coming upon them. Do you think people are going to be able to cope with that bill?
Well, I guess ultimately, in terms of the ETS, it's around about $3. I guess the question is that an appropriate price for a household to pay for the environment and for New Zealand to play its initial and early part in trying to tackle climate change. To me, that feels about right. Obviously we don't want to incur costs on households, but there is lots of options for them to change behaviour that would see them not face those increased costs. If you go back to things like, for instance, the home insulation package that the government is running, that will see substantial reduction in household costs for energy. As I said this morning, the advice we've had is if people have their tyres set correctly on their car, they may save twice as much as what the ETS would cost them in terms of fuel increases. So there are options, but let's understand, I mean, ultimately, the ETS is about putting a price on emissions for two things. One, to try and change behaviour, and secondly, to ensure that money can be recycled into, broadly speaking, forest owners so that they'll plant more trees. Now, we're seeing early success there. We're going into afforestation as opposed to deforestation. And as I said this morning, I think those that argue that we are somehow blazing a trail in the world just simply aren't right. 29 of the 38 countries who have affirmed the Kyoto Protocol have an ETS. In the weekend in Australia, Joe Hockey, on behalf of the opposition, said it's almost inevitable Australia will put a price on carbon. In the last budget in Australia, there was a regulation that power producers have to include 20% of their power coming from renewable sources. The estimates we have is that will add 7.1% increase to power prices as opposed to New Zealand's 5.1%. And around the world, whether it's in China, the United Kingdom, the United States or Australia, even if there isn't necessarily always an ETS in place, there is regulation which forces costs on consumers. Now, we as a government believe, and arguably supported by the opposition, that the right way to control emissions over time is through a price-based mechanism, and we hold to that view.
Which is really likely
to regulate
metal isn't going to make
things faster. No, and also, I mean, that's the point. I mean, we're starting at a modest entry point. And I think, you know, we're starting. And my view of this is that one has to ask oneself, where are we going to be in 2012 and 2013, the years ahead? And the answer is, I think, that there will be some sort of global agreement that will be reached. I'm not sure it'll be as perfect as some wanted to have when we went to Copenhagen, but countries will, I think, agree to reduce their emissions. And so New Zealand either can take the option of coming in modestly into the emissions trading scheme and put that price of carbon into the economy and over time have the flexibility to move that, or alternatively, of course we could delay things and then have a much more rapid shock to the economy. I think we're better to take the first option. I think that's going to position us in the best place. I still firmly believe that if New Zealand wasn't to play its part, that there would be implications for us in terms of the way our goods and services would be treated internationally. And I think that's unacceptable, given how trade-focused New Zealand is.
But are you aiming with NTS to actually cut emissions, or to just a bit of trade backlash?
Well, it's to start the process and to have a framework in place. And that's what the ETS does. It's ultimately through what it does in terms of both stationary energy, fossil fuels, and in terms of industrial processes, it starts the process of putting a price of carbon. Now, we've got a 2011 review. That's the opportunity for the government to reflect on what's happening around the rest of the world. And we've made it clear that if other countries don't play their part when it comes to agriculture, then we'll take a good look at that coming on the 2011 review. But I am confident that progress has been made. And all of the advice I get from what's happening in other countries in the world is that they are stepping up. It may not be through an ETS, but it's certainly through regulation, and that has a cost on consumers.
So why was $3 made in the budget for money to go to Copenhagen finance and developing
countries? Don't know the answer to that. You'd have to go and ask the Climate Change Minister's office. I mean, that's ultimately all accounting treatment. It's probably because if the firm commitment isn't made by Cabinet, then it doesn't get accounted for, because the accounting treatment will be at the time at which there's a budget decision, a Cabinet decision, and that Cabinet decision hasn't been made yet. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we won't make one. We've made an indication that if there's a global financing package, New Zealand will participate.
When you say $3, is that just for the power
component? My understanding is that's the cost of the ETS, about $3 a household. I think it's about $165 a year. It's an average. Well, look, there will always be some that it's a very complex issue. I mean, it's a truly complex issue. A lot of people don't realise that the money is not going overseas, it's actually going to either forest owners or maybe into a little bit of science R&D. There's a misconception with some people that somehow New Zealand's blazing a trail and leading the world when we're not. Some just simply don't believe in the science of climate change. We need to acknowledge all those things. But on the best advice we have, I think as an entry point, we're in the right place.
Wage growth, wage rates didn't rise much last year and probably won't again this year. What is that with New Zealanders who really feel they're just being snowed under with increased costs and really don't have much relief, knowing that they're going to get a pay rise, for example, this year or in the near future?
They're much better off under a national government. They've had a tax cut at the end of 2008, and in 2009 they've had a substantial tax cut that will take place this year. We've been controlling inflation by doing a good job taking the pressure out of the system. The long-term outlook for inflation is lower than under the previous Labor government. We've had 18 months without interest rate hikes, So I think the economic management that the government is putting in place in the economy is seeing a faster recovery. And look, in the end, yes, you're right, there's a cost for the ETS. It's half the cost that would have been there for labour. But what will impact on New Zealanders is when interest rates rise. Now, as I said last Friday, and I make the same point, for 18 months now, the Reserve Bank governor has been saying that rates are likely to rise in the middle of the year. That's a decision for him to make. He's completely independent. But if that's what he says, then that would be my expectations. He'll probably follow through. And he may well have a number of increases in interest rates over the next 18 months, but it won't be because of the budget. But what the budget will do is deliver better after-tax incomes for New Zealanders. And if you go and look at superannuitants, for instance, in the time that we're in office, a married couple is $100 a fortnight better off.
But interest rates come out only a spike next year, and you see that the Reserve Bank isn't likely to act.
Well, they won't act. They made that quite clear.
No.
No. I refer you to page 2 of the Dominion Post this morning in a brilliantly written article that summarised the position accurately. Thank you, Vin. Well, it's, look, credit where credit is due, okay?
So you're saying
that
interest rates will not go up next year as a result of that?
They might go up. They might go up, but they won't go up as a result of the budget, in my view. Yeah, but okay. But the Reserve Bank governor ignores an increase in inflation caused by a one-off spike because of an increase of GST. He's made that quite clear to the finance minister, and he's made it clear publicly. The long-term outlook for inflation runs at about 2.4%. It's lower than the average. We saw a 29% increase in inflation under the previous Labor government before there was any hint of a tax cut. And the budget documents make it quite clear that the expectations are that incomes will rise at a faster rate than inflation, a.k.a. in real terms, New Zealanders are better off. Over 4 years.
Did Kevin discuss it all?
Did I get it all right? I mean, that was roughly what you said, wasn't it? Okay, pretty good. Thank you. Okay. I'm not saying everything in the Dominion Post is right, because sometimes it's not, actually, but... Yeah, value for money, I'm sure.
Have you ever discussed the Tūhoe negotiations at all, Me Too provisions?
No.
Are you still confident that you're going to be able to get somewhere on that deal?
Well, I'd like to think we can do a deal. You know, I'd like to see treaty settlements completed by 2014, but they've got to be the deal that's fair for all New Zealanders.
Do you think that 2014
possible? Well, it's always going to be. It's always a challenge, and it is a challenge. But I'd like to think we can get there.
It's something like $4.8 million for the Pacific government.
Yep. What do you know? Yeah. So I personally don't know a lot about them. You'll need to take that up directly with the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs, but I do know that the allocation is across a number of areas. So it's $1.2 million a year. Of that, approximately $715,000 is going to Pacific Skilled Employment Scheme, $75,000 into what's called a leadership plantation, $65,000 into Buy Pacific Made, $60,000 into a village framework, and $85,000 into performing arts and cultural pathways. So the merits or otherwise of the organisation, you have to take up Pacific Island Affairs.
Is this a
partner
or a style investment?
No. My understanding is it's specifically a small amount of money targeted at lifting at Pacific performance.
Why is the government paying for money to buy Pacific Island?
Don't know.
Prime Minister,
yeah, you have to take it. Well, apparently it's for an expo event in Auckland, and we fund events like that. We don't fund buy New Zealand campaigns, but we do buy fund expo events. And we're putting $30 million into our expo in Shanghai.
What's the accountability measure on
this? Well, it'll go through the normal process. I mean, Treasury will have its responsibility. There'll be, obviously, the tyres will be kicked on whether there's performance. And I think we've seen from this government that's culled $4 billion worth of expenditure and spent the money somewhere else, that if we don't think we're getting value for money, then we stop things and change it, and it'll be no different for this organisation. If they don't meet their objectives and the outcomes we want, money will stop.
Was there any connection between this organisation and Michael Jones?
I don't know the answer to that.
know the reasons for the table, what has the SAS's involvement, if any, been in those?
Well, I understand in terms of the five NATO forces that were killed last week, that the crisis response unit and members of the SAS were dispatched. But I think by the time they got to the scene, the scent had gone cold, and from that point on, I'm not aware of any other involvement they've had. Thank you.